Gordon Hyland is the author of the novels Flashover and Major Inversions, both over there, as well as several short stories appearing in such publications as Warmed and Bound, that one, In Search of a City, Los Angeles and 1,000 Words, and others. He lives here, not in the store. I mean, Kansas City. Your mother would like him, as long as you don't show her his writing, but that's just a hobby. He makes videos for a living, not those kind anymore. Here he is, Gordon Hyland.
Thank you. So, this is called Biorhythms, the first chapter of Flashover. Bodies languish on racks, carved from the slab that once breathed life into this world. Asian mostly, but a few Americans, and one rare exotic beauty whose feminine contours and siren song that hands could neither resist nor silence. She would become her maker's masterpiece once his life's work was exhibited and his name household. All of them with horns smoothed and polished under the shed's clinical fluorescence, cavities gutted and routed for experimental hardware. Against the other wall, their companion necks suspend from hooks, finger markings evident, blonde, ebony, rose. Connective tissue sits in queue upon the workbench, ready to be machined to precision tolerances, these straps and nuts and pegs and bridges, coils of nickel-plated wire, instruments of torture. Evidence everywhere, yet all unfinished. With the luthier's ponderous bootsteps approaching, Sarah tugs a hanging chain, and the shed cloaks her in blackness. Lucidity still eludes him, leaving only these used-up memories, these hand-me-down dreams that Sarah embeds nightly. Despite awareness that the visions belong to her, channeled somehow, he can never steer them from their invariable conclusions. His own dreams are far easier to interpret, with their familiar realities and symbolic projections. The sounds of emergency vehicles approach, brakes squealing and light strobing, doors slam, urgent chatter while feet shuffle and equipment is gathered. He's dead again. Flaming grass encircles the hollowed ground in his periphery. Impossibly, he maintains an earthly view of the rural sky, which Sarah then fills, crouching over him, wearing a paramedic's half-zip jumper suit and that divine smile. She strokes his hair and brings her electric lips to his. Toby Moore's eyelids flicker, resolving their dewy focus upon a popcorn-textured ceiling. Concentric stains of faulty plumbing linger above his bedroom. The mattress under his back vibrates in five pulse bursts, synchronized with the lightning strikes that flood the walls. Sensations that are reminiscent both of his resuscitation and his recurring dreams about it. He flings a limb in the direction of the bedside alarm clock, but still the silent fire drill persists. 9:57. And it was five pulses, not three, which means the doorbell. He slithers off the mattress, grumbling consonants, and shuffles across the hardwood floor into the living room, where the table lamp echoes the bedroom's lightning show. A figure moves on the porch out front. The peephole's fisheye caricatures a 40-ish bottled blonde, sucking lipstick from her teeth and brushing wisps from her forehead with her ring finger. Natalie, the neighbor. A pan of baked goods balances in her other hand, brownies most likely, given their simplicity and her reputed aversion to domestic tasks. This must be important. Toby opens the doors, her smile assembles itself, then breaks down just as quickly when his eyelids recoil from the radiance of her backlight. As she takes in his dishevelment, her silhouetted mouth forms these silent shapes. "Looks like I missed thereafter." "Huh?" Toby croaks, palm shielding the violent rays. She tries again, her inflated lips exaggerating and contorting the same syllables that he can't hear. She missed a spot of passion plum lipstick on her incisor. Toby spares her feelings without a mention, then taps his temple to explain his auditory confusion. Now the squint is hers, until she notices he's not wearing that thing that he's always plugged into. "Oh," she says, more mouth shapes. "Wine scotch year on." Toby blinks several more times in response. He can't trust his eyes so early in the morning. "Should we reschedule? I could come back." Natalie thumbs down the street. Nah, he yawns, catching on. "We said 10, right? It's fine. I just didn't reckon I'd need the alarm this morning." She extends the pan to him with both hands, head sheepishly bowed in a question of offertory worth, the supplication. He peels back a tin-foiled corner, brownies indeed, and inhales with a practiced smile that's comforted so many widows and thieves alike on this very porch. He disappears back inside, wishing he could bring himself to charge actual legal tender sometimes instead of whatever bartering chips the locals deem of value. Natalie cranes her neck into the living room for a peek, but mines the threshold of this holy dwelling like a vampire awaiting express permission for entry. Newspaper fragments litter half the room, while other exposed surfaces are veiled in dust, the lingering musk of Indonesian tobacco. Stuffed animals and blonde dolls and impossible genetics strewn about, despite being a childless home. She considers suggesting that he trade out his services for some housekeeping favors now and then. Pull up in the dining room, Naughty, his voice calls, and I'll put on some coffee. Naughtily was the regretful nickname that Natalie had earned in college, and it stuck. She's afraid to know how Toby picked it up. As she crosses the room, various Jesuses eyeball her path from every wall, rendered in two dimensions or three, ethnicities from Semitic to African, imposters, all of them. Two steaming mugs appear on the table, one's Gothic script proclaiming that on the eighth day, God created caffeine. Toby pulls a robe around himself and flips a switch on a palm-sized gadget that he drops into his velvet robe pocket. An attached cord scales up his neck, where a beige electrode at its end disappears into his scruffy, saltwater blonde hair, an inch above his ear, with a satisfying magnetic thump. She'd never seen him without the device before. "I was just asking, why ain't you got your ear on?" she points, continuing her porch inquiry, as that voice finally comes into focus, and Toby sits down across from her. "I gotta recharge it overnight," he blows across his coffee surface. "So what was that before about being missed thereafter, some shit like that?" She wrinkles her nose and then makes the connection. "Oh, I said, looks like I missed the rapture. You and your nighty there, all pillow-pleated and bedheaded." He rakes a self-conscious fingers comb through his coif, and she laughs. "Your lip reading needs some work, though, darling." What helps when speakers don't run all their words together or compound them with their ceaseless gum chewing? He keeps these facts to himself. "So I bet you must sleep like a run gum baby," she says, "if you's all unplugged, right?" Toby laughs. "Can't switch off the brain, Naughty. I got just as much laundry spinning around up there as anybody, believe me. And hearing something, or just even thinking you hear it, it's all processed the same. It's probably more akin to, I don't know, blacking out your windows or something, maybe." Her nostrils flare with a tinge of embarrassment. After traversing small talk about bipolar spring weather, Toby settles in and asks what he can do for her. "Well, it ain't a roofing job," she chuckles. He doesn't. The memory's still raw. "I'm just going through some girl stuff, you know, man problems." She chews away the silence, one finger entwined in her locks. "But I bet you knew that." He shrugs with modesty. He knows now, so why spoil her fantasy once given the benefit of the doubt? Such freebies are often a thesis statement that tunnels down a predictable rabbit hole with little variation, upon which the core of his very reputation is often based. Natalie catches the glint off a rosary that appears at the base of Toby's sleeve and unspools from his wrist. He loops the slack remainder of the wooden beads around her own wrist like a bracelet, mirroring his own and binding the two, then places her manicured hand palm up on the table. His warm, deliberate hand grips hers, the silver crucifix charm palmed between them. She looks up, weakened already, to meet his eyes, but his are preoccupied elsewhere, despite her lingering fascination. He sets her other hand the same way, with his atop it, bare, his palm calloused and cracked with a pink scar tissue that few dare speak about. His first two fingers are extended as if taking her pulse. The accelerated throbbing at her wrist might be an omen, were it not so common among these sessions. Okay, she says, her quiver evident. "What's this got to do with..." "Shh, shh, shh." He shakes his head, ears cocked and eyes closed in concentration. But there's activity behind his lids, like REM sleep while fine-tuning a radio, measuring her. "Well, what if I get an itch or something, Toby?" "You won't." He shrugs some tightness out of his shoulders, rotates her sockets. A guttural drone now resonates from his sealed throat like an idling motorcycle, slowly revving as it sweeps through frequencies. His eyebrow considers one, just as the unseen Natalie prickles her downy blonde forearms at attention. He stops and intones the note twice again, like a singer verifying his baritone pitch pipe. Eyes now refreshed, he's open for business. "Alrighty, so tell me, what'd you have for breakfast this morning, Naughty?" "Well, Ron usually cooks, but he wasn't there when I got up, so I had one of them toaster pastries." "Why?" "What color's my robe?" "Red? Maroon? I don't know, velvet? That's not a color, I realize." But she snaps her gum. "It's kind of like a lie detector setup or something?" Unblinking focus. "I'm just getting a baseline." "So what does it matter what I say, anyway? I mean, I want to know about him, not me." Toby's grin, knowing grin, might be mistaken for a patronizing one, were Natalie able to distinguish such things in her shame. So, man problems, he says. Of the Ron variety? Yeah, I've been getting a total cheating vibe off of him lately. And you want to know if he is. That's why I'm here. Well, Naughty, I honestly have no idea. You can maybe ask around or something if you want. Her jaw detaches, and she tries to pull away with a scoff, but remains locked in his charged grip. She swallows, eyes to her cooling coffee. My girlfriends all said you could help me. And they're right. His soothing tone unmodulated, his hand steady. You're just asking the wrong questions, ones that are about other people. Released by passing clouds, oblique rays once again slice through the bay window at their side, modeling her face with the creases of sun worship. Little deltas form at the corner of her mouth and eyes, skin stippled even through her cosmetics. Ron, he continues, Ron's just a symptom. Of what, a lousy Missouri public schooling? How many of your exes cheated on you, Naughty? She sighs, feigning calculation. Well, I guess if you... All of them, he summarizes. Every swinging dick ever shared your bed was going to pack up his pickup and drive out on you eventually, right? She sneers for truth. Mm-hmm. He continues. I mean, is it really asking too much for them to put forth the same kind of effort they did that first date? Pay a little attention, make a girl feel desired? Certainly shouldn't be, she says. And if they can't be trusted to, can't be bothered to, well, hey, town's full of second stringers. Closing time at the well lacked no surrogate chivalry for unmanned women. In small doses, anyway, until they disappoint as well. Natalie nods on wide-eyed autopilot. Can't win for losing, Toby. And let's face it, he continues, hurts much less these days just to go on the offensive and do unto others before they can cheat upon you. Because they will do it, guaranteed. Except with Ron, he says, you don't want to have to cheat on him. He treats you like a princess and better every day. But all that past conditioning and impulses being what they are, your skeptic meter's pegging right now. So you manufacture these scenarios to justify your paranoia. You build up your defenses. You keep some options in the bullpen, all the while waiting for that other boot of Ron's to drop. Natalie reels, scanning Toby up and down. English, por favor. A reflexive grasp at denial. Everyone does this when confronted with the facts. He shoots her a doctoral look. Prognosis, terminal. I'm just saying Ron was doomed before you guys even met. Her denial persists. Then, reluctant, scrunched up contemplation. Finally, the light bulb. Unless I... Right, he nods. But not even... Especially then. So all this, you're telling me... Hey, Naughty, I'm only telling you what you already know. Toby gives her hands a reassuring pat and lets them go with the finality of benediction delivered and penance decreed. A negative of the crucified Savior remains impressed upon her flesh, a reminder of their heretical session, however fleeting. And all that junk about, she searches, brightening at the redefinition. My past? Father Foley don't need to know any about that, right? Toby taps a clove cigarette against its pack, his fingers swishing an X over his heart. The air saturates with those previously hinted Indonesian notes as the Kretek crackles, sending chaff embers near his face that he swats away. The hell you smoke them things for anyway? He regards the cigarette wistfully, nostalgia quickly shattered by the gusts of smoke coughing from his every orifice. The amateur smoker clears his numbing throat and rubs his lips across each other. They remind me of Sarah. Out the window, the yard next door commands his view, where a toddling girl in a dress too untamed to cover her diapers chases the calves of her young mother, whose vision is obstructed with grocery bags. Yeah, we all miss her, Natalie says, placating him. She must have been really special. He eyeballs her gaff, past perfect, but an apt tense in its own way. No, is. She is really special. I'm not giving up just yet.